Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, I'm glad I'm on the radio and not television, because if I were on television, then I might be getting visited by the FCC or the government or somebody, because right here in the studio, I mean, it, literally right here in my hands in the studio, a highly offensive object that apparently in certain parts of the world and even parts of our own country is dangerous. I mean, you even hold this thing up. God forbid you walk down the street and hold this thing up and maybe have it in your bag and pull it out of your bag and plop it on the table there at the coffee shop or at Starbucks or whatever. And you might get yourself in a little bit of trouble. And God forbid you should include this object on a little banner to promote, well, some kind of a religious organization and some kind of a religious event. Of course, that's exactly what happened. We talked to the other day to Ben Shapiro about it and about Pastor Greg Laurie and the Harvest Crusades in Southern California coming up next weekend, the weekend of August 17th at Angel Stadium, the 29th year in a row for the Harvest Crusades. And amazing what kind of offense people take to this little black thing in my hands here in the studio called a Bible. Let's talk to our good friend John Collins, the executive director of the Harvest Crusades and Harvest Christian Fellowship. How you doing, John?
Good. How are you, Steve?
Good. You know, I'm kind of out there on the edge today. I've got an actual Bible in my hands here in the studio.
Oh, like a rattlesnake.
Like a rattlesnake. Exactly. So I don't know if I'll actually make it out there next week, and we'll see what happens to me. So let's talk about what happened there in Southern California at in Newport Beach, an area called Fashion Island, which is a beautiful shopping area, when you guys decided to put up a little bit of an advertisement about the upcoming Harvest Crusade.
Yes. Well, of course, we advertise throughout Southern California on billboards and on bumper stickers. People lend us their bumpers, and, you know, we'll put up posters everywhere. But this year we wanted to go into one of the nicer malls. It's kind of a cultural center. And actually, we're in two different ones called the Irvine Spectrum and then also in Fashion Island. And so we went in and bought advertising, bought a big banner that flew right there in the middle of the mall and both of those. And they were up for a couple of weeks. And then the company that sells the advertising and owns the center asked that we would, first of all, they asked if we would change it, if we would remove Pastor Greg's image holding the Bible. So we did. We complied, and we submitted just a very generic piece of art that said Harvest, gave the dates and the times and some of the artists that will be with us. But then when we submitted that back to them, they decided that they weren't going to put it up at all. And so we were kind of just left scratching our heads. We didn't get an answer immediately. Even when we finally did talk with the Irvine company, they just said they had received some complaints, and they were going to take it down because of that.
Yeah, and what was that? I mean, it's not like this is a brand new event and people have never heard about it in Southern California. The Harvest Crusades are kind of part of the fabric there. And so did you guys struggle a little bit, John, with, okay, maybe we need to go to the social media world and kind of get into a fight with these guys, because you chose to just kind of comply, which I think, and I mentioned this the other day, that it's so important that we protect our witness. So was that difficult for you guys to kind of restrain yourselves on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, we didn't want to take the Irvine company to task because they weren't the ones complaining. They were kind of caught in the middle. However, they did in the end make a decision, you know, not to to let the advertising go. And of course, you know, if you walk through malls today, you probably see a lot of things that might be offensive to you or to me. And yet they're allowed to be, you know, remain. And so for us, you know, when I first heard about it, it just was an indicator of the culture. This is the direction that we're going. That somewhere along the line, it's now become fashionable to be intolerant to Christians, and we're putting on an event that we've put on for 29 years. in the heart of Orange County, and Orange County is one of our, probably one of the most conservative areas in the country, and it's happening there. And so, you know, you have to just wonder what's going on in our culture today when we can't advertise an event that has helped put families back together. We've seen marriages restored. We've seen people come who are suicidal that received help. We've, over the course of 29 years, seen more than 500,000 people find peace with God, make a profession of faith in Christ. And then on top of that, Steve, you know, we always do a compassion program. We've helped with a Los Angeles mission by raising food items. We have people bring food items. And then this year, we've partnered with Compassion International, and we've committed as an organization to help support 3,000 young children in Ecuador to get food and clothing and to get education. And we're going to ask those that show up at the crusade to help sponsor those kids.
Yeah.
So it's not just proclaiming the gospel that we do at this event. There's a lot of great things that happen in connection with it. And so, you know, we just kind of like, really, why would this be such a bad thing to advertise?
And, of course, you can go, you can survey the world and world governments and countries around the world. And when you choose by hook or by crook to remove Christianity from those environments, nothing good happens. That's just the basis of Western civilization and the fact that Harvest has been doing these wonderful things and God has brought so much fruit out of it. And the funny thing about the billboards, it's not like it was talking about Jesus Christ or Jesus is the only way. It was simply just a Bible. So as a result of that, and I saw this on social media, and I just I took my picture. I'm ready to go with that. A great little movement's come out of this. That's kind of a hashtag movement. Tell us about that real quick.
Yeah, it's we're running a kind of a campaign now that just says hashtag Stand with the Bible. So you know, whatever you put out on your social media, a lot of people are taking pictures of themselves holding a Bible. And you know, just to give you a background on where this whole Bible thing came from initially. I mean, Greg wanted to do a poster that was kind of honoring to the legacy of Billy Graham. And of course, you know, Billy was known for this famous phrase, the Bible says.
Yeah.
That's our authority. The authority that we have comes from the Word of God. And so that's really what was behind all of this.
Yeah, which of course is should be obvious to everybody, but isn't. Hashtag Stand with the Bible. So take a picture of yourself holding a Bible and put it out there on social media. John Collins, thanks for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you next week, buddy.
All right, Steve. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, friends, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. Causing trouble and offending people nationwide today because of this little thing I'm holding in my hands here in the studio. If you want to see it, you can join us right in the studio right now. On Facebook Live. So just go to Facebook, which may be, there's a good chance it's open on your phone right now, and you've just been scrolling mindlessly like we all do. But just go there, just get to the radio page, the Steve Noble Show on Facebook, and you'll see me holding this highly offensive item in my hands right here. It is. That's right. See, I'm hitting the microphone with it. See that? It's a highly offensive item called the Bible. So that's what John Collins, our good friend and executive director from Harvest Crusades and Harvest Christian Fellowship, who works with Greg Laurie out in Southern California. That's what we were talking about, and all the picture had in it was Greg Laurie holding the Bible. And people found that offensive, and eventually they gave him their money back and had him take it down. I did ask Ben Shapiro about that the other day when we did that interview. And by the way, if you want to hear that interview with Ben Shapiro, Mile a Minute, I had some commentary in between questions because I interviewed him earlier in the day and then played the interview. That was on Wednesday, so you can get the podcast if you'd like. One of my goals in life is to speak as quickly as Ben Shapiro. I'm not quite there, but I think I'm in the ballpark. So anyway, the podcast, or you can watch the Facebook Live. So the podcast at thestevenobleshow.com. And then, of course, on Facebook, the Steve Noble Show is the name of the Facebook page. So you can go there. But I asked Ben Shapiro about the little controversy, which he hadn't heard of, but he certainly was ready to chime in.
I mean, that seems, unfortunately, fairly in line with what's happening in major cities around the country. This idea that anything that offends must be pulled down unless it offends people on the right. Right? If somebody from the right had said, well, you know, you have this transgender advocacy billboard, we want that down because that offends my sensibilities. It's a drag queen billboard, and I have a 5-year-old, and I don't feel like telling my 5-year-old about that. Then it'd be, well, you know, toughen up, Snowflake. It's time for you to teach your kids about the facts of life. But if you see a guy with a Bible on a billboard, then it's inherently discriminatory and terrible. It's exactly that sort of culture war that drove the anger that created President Trump in the first place, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's a valid point. And FYI, well, see, this will be interesting. I shot an email earlier today to a really excellent young lady that works at the Daily Wire with Ben Shapiro, who's the one that handled the scheduling for us to get that interview pulled together. And I had an interesting suggestion if Ben Shapiro would be willing to put this out on social media. Again, this is the hashtag #StandWithTheBible. So just take a picture of yourself, you radical you. I'm holding one right now here in the studio. Just take a picture of yourself, put it out there on social media, and just put #StandWithTheBible. So here was my suggestion. Because they ended up covering the story that afternoon on the Daily Wire, which was awesome. We really appreciated that they would be willing to do that. I said, well, it'd be kind of funny if you had Ben Shapiro hold up a copy, perhaps just the Old Testament or the Torah, which is, I'm sure, what he reads or studies out of. Or even the Old Testament and New Testament modern-day Protestant Bible, right? And he held it up and said, hey, I stand with the Bible, even though I don't agree with, like, the second half of it. Or I don't agree with the second half of it, something like that. But I stand with it anyway. Something kind of funny like that. But he's not offended by it. So even though I don't agree with half of it, more than half of it, less than half of it in the New Testament versus the Old Testament, it doesn't offend me. So I suggested to them that would be kind of a fun way for him to wade in on the conversation once again. So we'll see what happens. Speaking of offensive, this is one of those times, I've said it before, where my axe has two sides, both sides are sharp, and I swing it in both directions. This time it's going to land at the foot of the Republicans and Donald Trump himself, and it's on the issue of abortion. Now, they have yet, and I think they're a bunch of spineless toads on this one, just put a bill, one single bill, to defund Planned Parenthood. All it takes is a single bill. You don't need 13,000 pages to do that. Run it through the House and make people actually put their vote where their mouth is and then force it through the Senate and then get it to the president and defund Planned Parenthood. The fact that they haven't done that is dereliction of duty, to say the least, on all of them, including the president. You want to talk a big game about being pro-life, but you don't have the backbone to do that? To me, that's pathetic, okay? Pathetic. But here's this story. I saw this one earlier today. So this isn't really a feel-good Friday like last week. This is just Truth Friday, okay? FDA purchases aborted baby parts to transplant their brain tissue into mice. Our FDA, under the Trump administration, from LifeSite News, a couple days ago. A new report indicates the Food and Drug Administration has signed a new contract to acquire body parts from aborted babies to be transplanted into so-called humanized mice. The grisly experiments allow mice to have a functioning human immune system for research purposes. Now, I doubt we'll hear some evangelical leaders like Pastor Jeffress at First Baptist Dallas come out and say anything about this. That kind of stuff really upsets me. CNS News today reported the details of the new FDA contract signed on July 25th, according to information published by the FDA, so you go right to the source, and the General Services Administration. Quote, the objective is to acquire tissue for humanized mice. Doesn't that sound innocuous, right? Pre-solicitation notice for the contract. The contractor, the notice said, would, quote, provide the human fetal tissue needed to continue the ongoing research being led by the FDA. Fresh human tissues are required, said the notice, for implantation into severely immune-compromised mice to create chimeric animals that have a human immune system, which sounds psycho anyway. Fetal tissues used in research is obtained from elective abortions, says the Congressional Research Service. And so this is under a Republican administration, a Republican House, a Republican Senate, who all went ballistic when the Center for Medical Progress was releasing all the sting videos about Planned Parenthood and some of these other people selling aborted baby parts, which is a federal law, a federal offense, selling and making money on it. So here, now that we turn around, and our FDA under President Trump, a Republican Congress, is procuring, and they're doing it the quote-unquote legal way, procuring fetal tissue. as a result of elective abortions. Really? Hey, Mr. President, get your rear end in gear. You're going to say you're pro-life? Do it. I know he's done some other things. That's great. I appreciate that. Praise the Lord. But on something like this and on funding Planned Parenthood, disgusting. You show me your faith by what you say. I'll show you my faith by what I do. While the FDA confirmed to CNSNews.com that its June 13 pre-solicitation notice for a contract to acquire tissue for humanized mice and the July 25th contract, as it signed with ABR, refer to the same deal, the FDA declined to answer 17 other questions, of course. Instead, the FDA provided CNSNews.com with a three-paragraph statement. In its statement to CNS News, the FDA stressed that it was committed to making certain its research followed all legal requirements and met the highest ethical standards. How can you meet any ethical standards when you're using tissue from aborted human children? Sorry, you're unethical and evil from the get-go. And we're not going to sacrifice our children so that we can be a little more healthy. Sorry, that doesn't fly. So I read like stuff like this, and I'm like, every evangelical leader on Donald Trump's Evangelical Advisory Committee should be speaking out and should be somehow, and maybe they don't need to do it publicly. And I hope and pray, please, Lord, let some of them have a backbone to reach out to the president and say, you must stop this. Do not allow the FDA to work with aborted children's body parts. Fetal tissue, as they like to call it. And while you're at it, defund Planned Butcherhood. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back.
Let's try it all.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. Don't forget hashtag stand with the Bible. Hashtag stand with the Bible. Take a picture of yourself and put it out there on social media. That's just a little bit of an answer, a little bit of an anthem for what happened out there in Southern California. When the Harvest Crusade, Pastor Greg Laurie, and they had some little billboards up at a really nice fashionable mall there in Newport Beach. I've been there a couple times. It's mega nice. But Greg Laurie holding a Bible in the picture. No, too offensive. That's so offensive. And they had to, made them take it down. They took it all down and refunded Harvest their money. And so you want to answer to that, then just do hashtag stand with the Bible. Take a picture of yourself with a Bible like the one I have right here in the studio, and put it out there on social media. I was just talking about hammering away at Trump and every Republican in Congress on the FDA buying fetal tissue. Where do they get that? That's from aborted babies, from elective abortions, which is 98.5% of them. And so shame on the president, to say the least. Shame on Congress, to say the least. And shame on Scott Gottlieb, President Donald Trump's nominee for FDA commissioner. I don't know if he's in there, if he's still in there. Let's see. Who's the current head? It's still Gottlieb, who calls himself a strong conservative. Yeah, if you're a strong conservative, what are you doing buying baby parts from aborted babies? And then then letting the psycho scientists at the FDA attach them to mice. Okay. Please, Lord, help us. Americans' views on the media. You might have seen this the other day. And welcome back. It's Steve Noble at the Steve Noble Show. And this was the General Social Survey. Ipsos did this. And I looked up some ratings on Ipsos. So whenever you get a survey or a poll or research, you always got to go look at who's putting the numbers out. Okay, who are these people? So I went to ended up at 538.com, and they kind of ranked all the different polling companies out there, and it showed where they had a little bias right or a little bias left. And Ipsos got a slight bias to the left, very like 0.06 or 0.6, but really small. So that was acceptable to me, looking at against all these other polling companies, and a B+ rating in terms of their science. So this is a pretty reliable poll, all right? And I'm not going to take an issue with it. But listen to this. The large majority of Americans, 85%, agree that the freedom of the press is essential for American democracy. Additionally, two-thirds, 68%, say that reporters should be protected from pressure from government or big business interests. Majorities of both Democrats and Republicans agree with these two statements, signaling deep support for the concept of freedom of the press, which comes from the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Ding, 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 ding. Good job if you got that right. Back to this article. Some of the limits of public support for freedom of the press are made stark, with a quarter of Americans, 26%, saying they agree. Listen to this. The president should have the authority to close news outlets engaged in bad behavior. 26% of Americans, including a plurality of Republicans, 43%. Likewise, most Americans, 72%, think it should be easier to sue reporters who knowingly publish false information. Okay, I don't have a massive problem with that because now you're more into like slander and libel. But that 26% of Americans saying they agree that the president of the United States should have the authority to close news outlets engaged in bad behavior, including a plurality of Republicans, 43%. You know how you test that for intellectual honesty? You ask that question when Obama is the president and see what happens. That's my point. When I talk about on the air regularly, equal weights and measures, and whatever microscope you put Obama under, you better be willing to put Trump under. Otherwise, you're intellectually dishonest. Unequal weights and measures, to go Old Testament on you. But this is ridiculous. 26% say they agree that the president should have the authority to close news outlets engaged in bad behavior, including a plurality of Republicans, 43%. Wrong. No individual in America should have that kind of power or authority. That's why we went to war in 1776. That's why they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to get out from under tyranny. If you had one person, president or not, elected or not, that has the ability to shut down a free press because they think they're engaging in bad behavior, welcome back to the British rule. Welcome back to Russia. Might as well go work, go live in Russia. Go live in under Putin. Because that's ridiculous. That's so ridiculous. And that's where you have to, for us as a Christian, for you as a Christian, me as a Christian, that's where the prophetic voice comes in. And in this case, a constitutional voice and a representative republic voice for freedom and liberty to say, no, you cannot do that. You can't do it. It's unbelievable. So disappointing that 26% of Americans at large and 46% of Republicans agree that the president should have the right, the authority to close news outlets. Holy cow. Do we need help or what? That's why I teach, this will be my sixth year in a row, teach a high school level civics and constitution course that's called Foundations of Freedom. And by the way, that's now available on the website. And your donation to purchase that, I think that's $149 because it's an 18-chapter lecture series by yours truly. And that just goes to support the ministry. That doesn't go into my pocket. And so that's why I do it. And originally it was another homeschool mom who talked to my wife, and then they're both like, Steve, you should really be teaching this stuff. I'm like, yeah, you're right. And so I started to. So that's Foundations of Freedom. That's available on there. But the fact that we have that many people that say the president should have the authority to shut down any news organization for quote-unquote bad behavior is really disturbing. That's a huge problem. Have you heard of Jordan Peterson? This is a really interesting. And by the way, I went to see Death of a Nation yesterday, which is the latest movie from Dinesh D'Souza. I'm going to talk about that in the last segment. But this was interesting. An Atlantic columnist from the Atlantic, not exactly a right-leaning organization, why the left is so afraid of Jordan Peterson. Do you know who Jordan Peterson is? How does a Canadian PhD guy become one of the biggest sensations out there in social media and YouTube, like Ben Shapiro? How does that happen? And he's not a Christian, by the way. Some people were assuming because he argues for Western civilization morals and things that are definitely based in scripture, a biblical worldview. He doesn't have one personally. You go read about it. He doesn't believe. He's an agnostic. He's not a Christian. Okay, so if you've ever heard that Jordan Peterson is a Christian, he's not, according to his own words and recently, all right? In an op-ed for The Atlantic published Thursday recently, Caitlin Flanagan explains why the left is so afraid of Jordan Peterson. This goes back to a couple of things Ben Shapiro said in our interview on Wednesday. So if you didn't hear that, go get the podcast at the stevenobleshow.com from Wednesday with Ben Shapiro, or you can watch the Facebook Live. Our Facebook page is just The Steve Noble Show. So why the left is so afraid of Jordan Peterson. The must-read piece is itself an example of what so obviously terrifies left-wing critics of Peterson, an intelligent, well-reasoned, and unflinching critique of identity politics, an ideology Flanagan suggests that has become even more militant and vulnerable as its doomsday clock ticks ever closer to the end. I certainly hope she's true. She's right. Flanagan begins by describing her first encounter with Peterson's teachings, which came by way of her teenage son, who was for some inexplicable reason watching a video of a psychology professor at the University of Toronto talking about Canadian law. But it wasn't just her teenage son who was following Peterson. It turned out a number of his friends, all of them like him, progressive Democrats, with the full range of social positions you would expect of adolescents growing up in liberal households in Blue Bubble Los Angeles, had watched the video as well, and they talked about it one to another. Nothing strikes more fear in the heart of ideologues than people in their own airtight bubbles rejecting their prescribed ideology. And it turns out that it isn't just her son and his friends. It's millions of bubble-wrapped teens and college students, many of whom voted for Hillary Clinton. So what's so appalling about Peterson? And this is exactly what Ben Shapiro was talking about the other day. What they were getting from these lectures and discussions, often lengthy and often on arcane subjects, was perhaps the only sustained argument against identity politics they had heard in their lives, writes Flanagan. That might seem like a small thing, but it's not. With identity politics off the table, meaning you're a liberal, you're a socialist, you're a Republican, you're a conservative, and all conservatives are white supremacist, homophobic, misogynistic, yada, yada, people like me. With identity politics off the table, it was possible to talk about all kinds of things, religion, philosophy, history, myth, in a different way. They could have a direct experience with ideas, not one mediated by ideology. All of these young people, without quite realizing it, were joining a huge group of American college students who were pursuing a parallel curriculum right under the noses of the people who were delivering their official educations, talking about liberal leaders in education. It's like 40 to 1 in some colleges and 17 or 20 to 1 in a lot of colleges, liberal professors to Republicans by voting, okay? Their voting records. In other words, Peterson's popularity demonstrates that even the left, iron-fisted stranglehold on academia has failed to choke out the true resistance. Flanagan boils down why the movement to take Peterson is so vicious and unhinged. Quote, it's because the left, while it currently seems ascendant in our house of culture and art, has in fact entered its decadent late phase, and it is deeply vulnerable. This is coming from a writer in The Atlantic, which is a very liberal magazine. In the midst of this death rattle has come a group of thinkers, Peterson foremost among them, offering an alternative means of understanding the world to a very large group of people who have been starved for one, writes Flanagan, who underscores that this group is emphatically not the identity politics embracing alt-right, as Peterson's critics often attempt to claim. Peterson's followers are, quote, people who aren't looking for an ideology, they are looking for ideas. And many of them are getting much better at discerning the good from the bad. The Democrat Party reviles them at its peril. The Republican Party takes them for granted in folly. The point is, Peterson argues facts, and he does it dispassionately, and that's dangerous in today's world. Ben Shapiro does the same thing, not as calmly, but in the same way. And Shapiro says, I'm not some dragon slayer. I just speak the truth and share facts, and nobody wants to do with the truth or facts. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. I hope you've had a good week. We had a great week yesterday, by the way. I pre-recorded that show, too. Scheduling stuff just was challenging this week. So pre-recorded Theology Thursday yesterday. That video is now up on the Facebook page, the Steve Noble Show Facebook page. And then the podcast is out there with Danny Aiken, the president here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, where I am most of the time studio-wise. We did I really wanted to talk to him in this incredibly divisive environment we have in the United States of America right now. I wanted to talk to him about division in the church, some of which is not good and some of which is necessary. So we did United or Divided, and we looked at things, different theological things, speaking in tongues, baptism, leadership in the church, women preaching, gender, sexuality, homosexuality, all these kinds of issues, and asking the question, are these hills to die on? And so should we separate from other people for this? We can't do ministry together because of this. We can do ministry together. So that was a really helpful conversation in terms of just how we deal with each other in the body of Christ when we call ourselves Christians, but run into some differences on what we believe. That was a really helpful conversation. So that was yesterday's Theology Thursday, of course. Wednesday was Ben Shapiro, the Ben Shapiro interview. And I am going to get a chance to interview him again. We've been in communication with his staff, a few emails here and there over the last 24 hours. So that'll definitely happen again. I'm actually going to stop by the Daily Wire when I'm out in L.A. Next week. I'll be out there for the Harvest Crusades. We talked to Pastor John Collins in the first part of the show about the big controversy out there with Greg Laurie and the Harvest Crusade banners they had up that had a picture of the Bible, that offensive Bible that was out there. And so I'll be out there for that because I host the live radio broadcast all three nights, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so Daily Wire is there in L.A. So we're going to swing by. My youngest daughter's going to be with me. We'll swing by there Friday. He's not going to be there because he's doing a couple of huge live events, I think Dallas and Phoenix, at the end of next week, the middle of next week, I don't know, but it's sometime next week. So Ben Shapiro won't be there, but some of his staff will. So I'm just going to keep sewing into that relationship and see what happens there. But that was an awesome open door that God provided for us. So that was Wednesday, if you want to listen to that. Also the Facebook Live or the podcast, thestevenobleshow.com, where you can find all that information. Okay, right out of the gate, Dinesh D'Souza's newest movie, Death of a Nation. I'm going to give mostly two thumbs up. And I don't like the imagery of half the picture is Abraham Lincoln, then it kind of morphs into Donald Trump. Obviously, Dinesh D'Souza is a big Donald Trump fan, and mostly because he's really anti-liberalism, anti-progressivism, and so am I. But that kind of imagery and stuff, I was like, okay. And I went to see it yesterday with, I think there were four other people in the theater, which is pathetic because there's some great history in here. It's not completely accurate from what I've been reading and studying, but it's mostly accurate. And the accurate part of it, and where, you know, you leave things out and make it look like the Republicans or Republican leaders never make any mistakes. And of course they do. But most of it is right on. And it's really, it will really challenge your understanding of where does liberalism and progressivism come from and who's behind it. And even like the civil rights movement and slavery, which people now pin that through things like the alt-right, which isn't right at all. The alt-right, white supremacy, all that, they try to pin it to us on the right, if you're a conservative, especially if you're a Republican. And history is the exact opposite. And that's where it's really effective, Death of a Nation. So I found one review. Most of the reviews from a liberal perspective and are just hammering it, right? But this one I think is really good and even-handed. So they talk about where they think it fell through. This was from the American, thenewamerican.com. Continuing his theme that the American left, which he traces through the history of the Democratic Party, has much in common with movements like fascism and National Socialism, which will take you all back to Mussolini, as well as, yes, Nazi Germany. Don't expect the liberal media to give you an accurate review of this movie. The Washington Post's scathing review offered little in way of telling readers what the movie was actually about, dismissing it as riddled with historical inaccuracies without offering much in the way of examples. That's identity politics. You just throw bumper stickers at the other side. While D'Souza certainly pushes the historical envelope at times, his motion picture is much closer to the truth than the review offered by the Post. It aims to link Democrats to slave owners and segregationists, this is a quote, ignoring the fact that the two parties swapped places on race in the mid-20th century, most decisively with the Democrats' support of the 1964 Civil Rights Act and 1965 Voting Rights Act, argues the Post, which is so misleading. From this article, I would agree that it is somewhat unfair to tar modern Democrats with slavery, but the Post answers here with its own myth that they dishonestly call a fact. That myth being that the party swapped places on race. Their assertion that the Democrats supported the 1964 Civil Rights Act, for example, simply ignores the fact, an undeniable historical fact, that a larger percentage of Republicans voted for the law than did Democrats. Perhaps most devastating for the Democrat myth that all the segregationists became Republicans, the film notes that only about two out of dozens of office-holding segregationists in Congress switched to Republican. That was so-called Dixiecrats, okay? Albert Watson of the House and Strom Thurmond of the Senate. On the contrary, as documented in the movie, Bill and Hillary Clinton actually praised arch-segregationist and former Klan recruiter Robert C. Byrd upon his death. So the point there, the Dixiecrats, all these Dixiecrats, and they said, oh, that they all ended up switching to the Republican Party. No, there are dozens and dozens, over 100. You know how many switched? Two. The rest of them stayed where? In the Democrat Party. Legitimate criticism in the movie can be made. He has a Confederate battle flag hanging from the front of a Southern mansion before the Civil War, which is ahistorical. He continues this thing about demonizing Andrew Jackson, and this time he throws in another 19th century Democrat politician, Martin Van Buren. No doubt the Democrats of that era had their faults, but so have the Republicans since that time, although one would not know it from watching this movie. So he doesn't ever really kind of lay any truths about the deficiencies of Republican leaders out there in the movie. It's just all going after the left. All in all, however, I was pleased with this movie. Again, this is the review I'm reading, which fairly makes the case that the American left shares much in common with the collectivist ideologies of the Italian fascists and the German Nazis. He documents that Benito Mussolini was a Marxist as a young man and even edited a socialist newspaper before concluding that he needed to appeal to Italian nationalism to win power in Italy. D'Souza performs a valuable service. Watch this. Most people don't know this. By demonstrating that Franklin Delano Roosevelt admired Mussolini, a feeling that was reciprocated. Mussolini, the film chronicles, said that FDR was one of us. What's that? A nationalist socialist. Roosevelt. Roosevelt's director of the Fascist National Recovery Act, Hugh Johnson, that's an actual name, openly admired Mussolini. The historical truth is that the New Dealers and the Italian fascists had something of a mutual admiration society in the early years of the Roosevelt administration. And progressives and liberals will point to Roosevelt and the New Deal as some great advance in Americanism. It wasn't. It was a lot closer to thinking like Benito Mussolini. Ouch. Hitler effected a similar merger of nationalism and socialism in Germany. Nazi is simply short for national socialism. It's kind of like calling communists commies. Hitler had no problem with socialism, but considered the German communists as traitors to Germany because they had an allegiance to Moscow. He employed typical leftist politics, railing against the wealth of the Jews. D'Souza also slays the myth that Hitler was somehow a Christian, which is ridiculous, of course. From early 20th century, listen to this, American progressives, Hitler and the Nazis, this is all in the movie, Death of a Nation, got the idea for eugenics, and he praised, guess who? Margaret Sanger, who was the founder of the American Eugenics Society, later renamed, ding, 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 wait for it, Planned Parenthood. Now listen to this. I didn't know this. After his escape to South America, Hitler's angel of death, the notorious Joseph Mengele, who was doing all this crazy experiments and stuff, built a new career as an abortionist. Wow. Another service performed by D'Souza in the film is his analysis of Charlottesville alt-right organizer. So tomorrow, or the 12th, is the one-year anniversary. I'll talk about that in a second. Jason Kessler, portrayed now by the media as some sort of conservative. Kessler was actually a supporter of both Barack Obama and the leftist Occupy movement, and by the way, is a pawn of George Soros. All progressivism and a lot of liberalism, which goes back to fascism and nationalism. And so they try to pin all that as if that's conservatives, and it isn't. The historical column it belongs in is the Democrat Party. Honestly, after his previous movie, Hillary's America, I expected the guy from TheNewAmerican.com, I expected a dry repeat of thinly disguised Republican Party propaganda. Yes, D'Souza still found nothing negative to say about the Republican Party's role in moving our nation away from the principle of limited government found in our Constitution, but he expertly used cinema to expose many of the ideological and historical connections between modern American liberals with the progressives, socialists, national socialists, and fascists, which is why the movie is worth seeing. So I'm telling you, you should definitely invest the time and the money and go see Death of a Nation. But don't drink the Kool-Aid, you know, without your eyes open. Because he's definitely, you know, he's obviously a huge Trump guy and is not willing, at least in the part in the movie, to say anything negative about the Republicans, which obviously there's negative things to say. But overall, that whole history, which nobody knows and nobody gets taught that, and is verifiable, is true. The Nazi Party, to Margaret Sanger, to abortion, to fascism, to FDR, to the New Deal, you trace it back, and the Democrat Party's roots are there. And that's not popular, but it is accurate. Let's finish on this. Let's just make sure we're praying about Charlottesville. So that's going on. There's an anniversary of that violent rally. The alt-right, which is they're mostly socialist and fascist. They're left, they're progressive, the alt-right, right? Sorry, that doesn't work. And white supremacy, follow that back. Left, liberal, progressive. But that's going on this weekend. So finally, they're mobilizing the way they should have last time. State, local authorities, they've declared a state of emergency in Virginia. They're mobilizing to take care of it. But let's make sure we're doing our part. If we don't live there, and most of us don't, you might have friends there. Let's make sure this weekend we're praying for peace. We're praying for peace. Politics isn't the answer. Political ideology is not the answer. The only answer to all of this mess, racism and the rest of it, is the gospel of Jesus Christ and the truth of God's word. Don't forget that. This is Steve Noble. It is the Steve Noble Show. Have a great weekend, and God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.